I've got a little update for you, potentially.
Ooh. Is this another update of Henry's beefcake journey?
It might be.
Play the jingle.
Oh, 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 yeah. Come on, mate. Yes. Ah, I'm in agony and I absolutely love this. Ah, more pain.
Crunch it, push it, flex it.
More pain.
Smash it, sprain it.
Way.
The path to beauty is prolapsed hemorrhoids.
Ah.
Henry's beefcake journey.
But is it, though?
It might be.
Right, okay. Okay, don't pay, okay. Take the jingle back.
It might be time for a new jingle, actually. Are you sitting down?
Yeah. Okay.
I've actually had a session. I've actually had a session. Has he actually had a session? They're saying he's had one session. He's actually had a session. Beefcake journey. It was quite a short session.
Mainly admin.
There's a lot of stuff to talk about at the beginning of a session. The first session, certainly.
Some more emails.
Plus, he was 10 minutes late.
Did he add the 10 minutes on at the end?
Well, I worked out that by the time I got home, it had been an hour since the beginning of the session.
If you don't include the toilet break in the middle of the session.
Beefcake journey, phase two.
Oh, so turning up is phase two, is it?
Okay. Yes, it is, Mike. Get off my fucking case, man. I've had one freaking session. Technically 45 minutes. 3/4 of a session. So by the time I finish my second session, I've done one session and a half or 3/4 of the next session.
Depending on how late you are for the second session. Increasingly lacklustre and lackadaisical about turning up for the sessions.
And generally speaking, I tend to be on time for the things the first time I do them, because then you, but the second time I'll take my foot off the gas a bit and I'll probably be late as well. Plus, because he was late for the first session, we've already set up a culture of lateness in the relationship. Yeah, I think we could be looking at the first ever sort of 5-minute personal trainer session by the end of my four.
So he was late, you're saying, or were you late?
No, he was late for the first one.
Oh, my God.
Because he simply, had he been boy cried wolf, is that what it was? He simply didn't believe that it could be real, that you were going to be there.
It could be that.
Maybe he wasn't going to come at all, and then at the last minute he thought, I should just check.
I should just check he's there. He probably won't be, but you never know.
And then you were there.
And there was, there was some energy sapping had taken place in the email exchange over the past 3 weeks. I think that slightly sapped some energy out of the initial...
Some of the urgency had gone.
So you burned off the honeymoon period in the ether.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. So we were already both quite jaded by the time I got my shorts on.
But he would have been pleased to see that you were alive, surely?
Yes, I mean, that's 99% of what we're doing together, me and him.
Mm-hmm.
Is maintaining my longevity.
Mm-hmm. Keeping the show on the road.
So from that point of view, it's going quite well.
How many minutes, days or weeks of extra life do you think you've bought with your 45 minutes of exercise?
Well, that can only be worked out in retrospect on death.
Okay. Based on the estimated initial death.
Yeah, so the coroner will have to do an estimated initial death, calculate the day of my actual death, subtract one from the other.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how the result of that, my personal trainer... Well, that I suppose that's how many stars he'll get online. I'm not sure how it works. I think presumably that'll have to feed back to him in some way.
Henry, when you first appeared on the call this morning, I didn't want to say anything, but I thought...
Yes, go on.
Oh, Henry is looking absolutely massive.
Yeah.
Muscly.
I know. I've really, really, really beefed out. It was an incredible 45 minutes.
Only from the ankles down, though, so far.
Yes, we're starting from the bottom up. That's where we're going.
Those haunches look strong,
You've
I thought.
You've got to get your foundations... Yeah, meaty. So I turned up on time. Mm. I had to go into the sub basement. I had to go through the pods or something. I tried to describe before these sort of plastic tubes.
Those sort of verification tubes you told us about.
A plastic tube. It's a kind of a threshold between two worlds: the world of the world of beef and the world of
the weak.
What we call them now? the weak, the pathetic, or
the shrimps,
the clothed shrimps.
So you've gone from the clothed shrimp world into this liminal space and emerged naked and glossy into the
naked and glossy reborn
Greco-Roman wrestling ring
into the But it's quite tense in the threshold because you don't know if the other side of the plastic tube is going to open. What happens is you put a code in, you walk into a plastic tube, opens. Can you picture this? It's an up-down plastic tube. So it's not, you don't have to crawl through. It's, mm-hmm. it's up-down.
To crawl up.
then for a second you're trapped.
Mm-hmm. So you don't know whether or not you're going to be rejected and spat back out into the prawn zone.
Exactly. I think that can happen. Yeah, there's some sort of scanning takes place of beef potential.
Insufficient beef potential. Back to the bottom of the sea, you worm.
Yeah. Well, no, then you're shot straight up into a sort of, a classic shrimp space, so probably like a library or something. Yeah. Well, into one of the knowledge zones, because it's a different world. There's the beef zones of London. And the knowledge zones. Mm. So you'd maybe spat up into the Tate Gallery, for example, Tate Modern, or into the newly refurbished National Portrait Gallery. And that's why when you go to the National Portrait Gallery, you'll see more people coming. Well, if you do stand and
you'll see more people coming out of a tube than anywhere else.
Or anywhere else.
That's why a lot of people are in gym gear as well, isn't it?
That's right. And they'll have like a rolled up towel under their arm.
Just spilt Huel down their chins.
Yeah. And they'll have a packet of... A sort of protein nut mix, which they'll sadly place on a bench, knowing that they'll never need them again.
Oh, well, you can't take those into the Portrait Gallery. You've got to leave them at the door, haven't you?
Exactly. So I was allowed into the space, sat there. He texted me saying, I'll be there in a bit. He said he was going to be 5 minutes late. He was 10 minutes late. I mean, weirdly, I know the tactics. I mean, you can't trick a tricker. Is that the phrase?
You're initiated. In the art of being late for being late.
I'm initiated in the ways of being late. So he did the classic, which is when you're running late and you know full well you're going to be 10 minutes late, you say you're going to be 5 minutes late. Mm-hmm. Because by the time you turn up, you're actually no longer 10 minutes late. You're actually only 5 minutes late for the new deadline which you've set, which is 5 minutes late.
Which is what you said you were going to be in the first place, was 5 minutes late.
Exactly. So these are all tactics I've used. The other classic one is if you're not going to turn up at all, you say you're in France.
Such a bulletproof excuse, that, isn't it?
Absolutely bulletproof. Well, that was what I used to use when I cancelled gigs and stand-up. You know that, don't you? We talked about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen you use it.
Yeah. I mean, it's an absolutely... I should almost feel I shouldn't share it on the podcast because it's such good information.
It's so powerful.
If you ever need to get out of anything, the thinking is, if you just say, I can't make it on Thursday, people will say, what? Well, they might say, why not? Or they might say, what are you doing on Thursday? And then the excuse you have might be something where they'll then go, well, you could cancel. You know, you might go, I'm having lunch with Brian. I mean, that's not a good excuse.
Brian May. It depends on the Brian, May. Doesn't it, in that case? If it's Brian May, then it's quite fair.
Depends on the Brian.
No one's going to object about that.
It's all about the Brian.
Brian De Palma.
Again, a good one. Blessed.
Brian Boru, the ancient king of Ireland.
Old school, but still works. Whereas if you say, I can't make it because I'm in France, people just, it's too big.
It's too late.
It's too late and it's too big. People can't, the mind of the person you're late for then moves on to other solutions instantly. The only problem with that is sometimes if you are in France, it's the boy who cried France, which actually happened to me last week because I genuinely was in France. And I did have to cancel a few things and I told people I was in France. And I knew full well they would never believe me that was in France. So that's the trade-off.
Today's TED Talk is from Henry Packer on the art of lateness.
Henry, I couldn't make it for today's TED Talk. Because he's in France.
Unfortunately, it doesn't get you out of engagements in France, does it? That's the problem. It does have that one flaw.
Does not work if you're in France. Please, for the love of God, stop doing this if you're already based in France. it simply doesn't work. Now, his excuse, interesting, was that he cut off the top of his finger. So
he really doesn't want to spend time with you, does he?
Do you think that's his version of I'm in France?
I think that's his version of trying to get off the front line of the Somme, isn't it? He views you as his Somme. He's trying to get himself a blighty.
See, he spent the morning running at a dagger trying to injure himself. Oh, well, that's the thing I didn't know, you see, because also he had a large prop. He had a big white, bright white bandage on his finger.
Was part of his excuse that he couldn't get into the gym because he couldn't use the fingerprint reader to get into the plastic tube because he chopped off his finger? Was that...
All I know is I was thinking it was a real Schrodinger's cat. If this is equally true or not, I don't... There's no... But that's what's great about France, or big excuses, which is... I'm not about to have a conversation with someone saying...
How'd you get your finger?
Did you cut your finger? Show me. And, you know, I didn't want to be the guy that yanks off the white bandage to see his finger's actually fine, and then has to remove it with my teeth to make the point. Oh no, but you know, or you don't want to be the person that removes it and goes and you know and sees that it is actually cuss or whatever.
You've grabbed hold of enough wigs that turned out not to be wigs in your past.
Exactly,
you?
I've done that so many times. I've yanked so many beards. But it's like when you say you're in France. That's another key part of that excuse is you say, I'm in France. You don't say, I'm going to be in France. You say, I can't make it. I'm in France. No one wants to have a conversation with someone, with another human being, challenging them on whether or not they're in France. It's just not a conversation you want to have. You don't want to say to someone, Henry, are you really in France?
Prove it.
Prove it. No one's ever said that to me. Because it's almost degrading for everyone to even go there. It's almost like if he has made up that he's in France, I didn't even want to know. Like, same with this guy's finger. I was like, he's probably cut his finger off. It's a big lie to tell.
Also, it's a big lie to buy yourself 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
But maybe he's not as adept at this as Henry.
That's a good point.
He panics.
Maybe I should be giving him tutoring.
People who aren't used to being late makes them panic, really panicked.
Yeah, whereas I'm actually in my element when it happens. I actually finally feel like I'm in the zone.
You're doing what God meant you to do on this earth.
Yeah.
Was be late.
I'm very good at it. Except my one Achilles heel with lateness is I will, no matter what the story is, no matter how late I am, I will turn up with a piping hot of Pret coffee in my hand.
And this is well known. I was talking about this yesterday with someone who's, you know, it's just well known that you are late with coffee.
I'm late with coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And often a selection of pastries and perfectly cured breakfast hands.
And often and some watercolours I've done en route.
Of Wren Cathedral somehow.
And it can only have been done in person because there's a painting of today's newspaper in that painting as well. So he must have been there. Today's Brittany today, or Brittany aujourd'hui. It was weird that he was late in making excuses. It didn't fit in with what I was kind of hoping from a personal trainer, which would be more like, let's do this, go, up and down, go, motivation.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a bit more like real life kind of...
If I'd ever went down that route, I think I'd want the personal trainer to be there when I... To have already been... He's already done 6 hours of exercise before I've got there. He's slapping the guy before me on the buttocks and, you know, high-fiving them on the way out, you know, chalks going everywhere and drops of sweat.
Yeah,
you know.
He's talking his ass.
Yeah, his ass. He's hosing down someone else's ass.
He's creating a talc paste, which he's scooping off, and then rubbing into my thighs as a pre warm up sort of protein
poultice.
Protein poultice. I've actually had a session. Has he actually had a session? They're saying he's had one session. Beefcake Journey, Phase 2.
So what did he actually do with you in the session?
Okay.
Or was it just a tour of the machines? Or did he actually, did you crunch it?
No, so we did, here's what we did. We did a little bit of a tour of the machines. It's a really gross, like, sub-basement world, the gym world in London. It's very much, if this wasn't us in here, it would be rats. It would be it would be rat pandemonium. It's like little stairways and little passages all going deeper into little caverns with more and more sweaty artificial lighting and sort of sweaty people in corners just sort of groaning. It's quite a sort of dark, strange, it's a strange world. Anyway, he sat me down on a machine. I had to push some bars forwards and backwards. And I thought, and I actually felt, it felt good, actually. It was like, I've got, you know, as I've always said, I've got great scaffolding. It just needs some meat hanging on it. You know, I've said that before. And it's what a lot of people say and think about me, isn't it?
It's not an obvious metaphor, because I don't think in the real world you ever do see scaffolding with meat hanging off it and think, they've really done a good job there.
You know what? Trades people get a bad name, but look when you see that kind of thing, you think, actually, you know what? The amount of lamb hanging off that scaffold there.
And the resultant crowpocalypse around it.
Rats going up, crows coming down.
The resulting cronado, which has even got Chris Packham tweeting, please, for the love of God, kill as many crows as you can. I don't care how you kill them.
Chris Packham's just tweeted, I'm sure the Imperial War Museum has got an old flamethrower we can use.
Anyway, point being that, yes, yeah, so I thought it felt quite good. I was like, I'm using my...
Your meat.
I was given this meat, and I'm making something of it. It felt quite good, pushing it up and down. And I did it 12 times, and he was like, how's that? And I was like, it's okay. And he went, okay, now let's put some weights on it. Classic. Mm. But it's true. I was like, all right, I've just been moving the naked mechanism. Yeah, that was the naked mechanism.
Just moving an empty metal tube.
That's basically...
Most of the weight of which is taken by the machine that it's attached to.
Exactly, yeah. I learned a few little techniques. So one is, when he says... So he says, do it 12 times. You do it. Then he says, how was that? And the first time I did it, I said, oh, that was fine. And then he went, okay, and put more weights on. And then I did it and was like, oh, that was really hard. So we went to the next machine. I was one step ahead. I did it. Yeah. It was fine. But instead of telling him it was fine, I said, that was actually quite hard. Mm. And he didn't add any extra weights on.
Yeah, well, you already hacked the system.
You already found a way of getting a personal trainer and making yourself scrawnier and scrawnier.
I'm actually
going to
make myself weaker.
They've
never seen this happen. He's There was one point where he gave me an exercise which I wasn't sure if it was taking the piss or not, because it was just stepping up and down on a sort of little plastic sort of box.
Did he just need to make a phone call or something? It feels like he's buying time.
Just need to test out the new plastic box he'd bought?
Well, anyway, I think it might have been during that point where a thing happened where, now this is the thing I feared in going to the gym, which is why I always go at a time, well, I say always go, I've been once, but I went at a time when there's no one else there, like at mid-afternoon, very quiet time. Because what I fear is just being surrounded by true beef legends. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, cast of the gladiators.
Exactly. Yeah, so what happened, at one point what happened was I became aware out of my peripheral vision that there was a guy on some sort of acrobatic, I don't know if it was rings, he was doing the most unbelievable stuff. I could tell. The way he was moving his body, he was like hinging his body around and yanking himself up and down and doing like balletic stuff on rings or something, or some kind of high thing. That was while I was doing the thing of stepping up and down off a plastic box. And it was happening right next to us.
Like, as if you've just recovered from a very long and serious illness. The very first stages of your rehabilitation.
Mike, that's the illness that we call life.
Yeah, baby. And okay, I'll put my hand up. I'm suffering from a bad case of it. And while that was happening, I noticed my personal trainer was actually... I was stepping down off the plastic box and he was sort of getting slightly mesmerised by what this person was doing. But really? I couldn't look at what they were doing because... So I'd never actually looked at it in the face because I knew that, like Perseus with Medusa, my beef would turn to dust.
And also you had to concentrate on that box because... Imagine if you'd not managed to step onto a box. Why a man was acrobatically gymnasticking next to you?
I thought, for God's sake, for one thing, Henry, don't fuck up stepping on this box for the love of God.
Don't fall off this box and slice off the end of your finger.
Yeah, so that was a moment. But I didn't look at the person, so it was fine. I think that often that works for me in life. If you're really afraid of something, don't look at it.
Don't engage with it.
Oh, yeah, I had to stand on a wobbly thing. Have you done that?
No, I don't spend any time in gyms. What's the purpose of the wobbly thing?
Well, it's to make sure that you can stand on a wobbly thing.
Mm-hmm. And could you?
Sort of half.
Okay.
Yeah. I can half stand on a wobbly thing.
How was the beef master at the end of the session? Was he pumped? Was he excited?
Not really.
Was he despondent?
I think he's sort of got the measure of me, which is, it's a fairly... I think me and him, you know... If you leave out a glass of cold water, it'll become warm. Mm. Or if you leave out a glass of warm water, it'll become cold. Well, it'll adjust to the same temperature as the room around it. Mm-hmm. I think we've both hit a sort of quite quickly.
So any possible frisson there might have been is at room temperature already.
Exactly. We've gone straight to room temperature. We're both in our comfort zone, which is he turns up late. Mm-hmm. I don't pump that much iron.
Mm-hmm. You don't put as much effort into it as you could.
And I think neither does he, probably. I think it works for both of us. I think both of us probably feel that to some degree, if we're going to make progress in life, we need to get out of this relationship.
But you know what they say, Henry? Every beefcake journey starts with a single step onto a very low plastic box. Let's turn on that bean machine. This week's topic, as sent in by Muriel from Illinois, is the Higgs boson slash particles.
Good grief.
You've come to the right people. Where do we even start?
Now, the only one of us who has any kind of scientific education really of any kind is Mike.
Guilty as charged. I did all the science GCSEs, Ben.
Did
physics,
you?
Chemistry, biology, the triumvirate.
Alchemy.
Alchemy.
Astrology.
Knowledge of the winds.
Necromancy.
Necromancy. Water divination. Juggling. And
magnets.
And magnets.
Juggling, which is of course the origins of particle science. Well,
exactly. I tell you what, when people ask me about my science heritage and my science story.
Yeah.
I often think about, I did do biology GCSE.
You don't care who knows it.
I don't care. I'm literally not fussed about talking about it. I very nearly did RE GCSE.
Okay.
And you have to choose between science and RE.
Exactly. The ultimate choice.
That classic choice, yeah. Science and God.
I mean, you know, and I mean, look, we're talking about, what, a 15-year-old boy here. Mm-hmm. Wrestling with such huge concepts, and I was fully aware of the impact on me, on there's no reason to be overly humble about this, on society, of what choice I made.
Whether or not you got a decent grasp of photosynthesis,
exactly.
Or Sikhism.
Yeah.
Of course, impossible to know both. Impossible.
You can't hold both of those things in your head at the same time. But I was so indecisive. I absolutely had sleepless nights over it. I was like, which do I choose? And I could see these two paths going out ahead of me.
One in which you become the Pope. And one in which you win a Nobel Prize for science.
Yeah. Well, it's Pope or Packham. Which is it going to be? Is it going to be Pack-a-Poke or Pack-a-Packham?
We've mentioned Chris Packham a few times in this podcast, just to explain for people outside of his sphere of influence.
He's the UK's leading popular naturalist.
Yes. Basically, if you don't know who Chris Packham is, he's basically David Bellamy.
Yeah. He's the guy Attenborough goes to for advice.
Yeah.
About what penguins get up to in the warmer months.
I was absolutely... I just couldn't decide. What happened was... Initially, I chose biology, right?
Mm.
And I was in my first biology class. And I was like... There's a bloke in a in a beard.
They often dressed in a beard, didn't they? Biology teachers. Ours did, certainly. Well, it's the lab coat of the biologist.
It's the lab coat of the biologist.
Yeah.
It's obviously not a real beard, but because the beard has so many useful functions, doesn't it, for a biologist?
You can store water fleas in it.
You can grow plants and animals in it. It protects the neck from all the known gibbons. Isn't it? Gibbons and baboons go for the neck, and geese, don't they? They all go for the neck.
Those are the main animals at GCSE that you go into, isn't it?
It's gibbonology.
Gibbons, baboons and geese.
I actually chose to take theory of baboons, which is really interesting.
I did practical geese, so.
Which is how I got these scars.
And I also, I studied gibbons, but through the lens of RE.
What did Confucius...
What's their spiritual life?
I have to say, yeah. About gibbons.
Can a gibbon be made to wear a cassock? How long before they just tear it off?
It's moments, Henry. Yeah. It's moments. Can I just say, I did both RE and biology.
What? Whoa. No!
I am the destroyer of worlds.
Vile magic is this.
I'm more powerful than you can ever imagine.
But that's why you are the only possible candidate in the world to harbour the bean machine.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. The two twin disciplines.
Which is where the divine and the scientific meet.
The sacred and the profane. clasp hands. Deep, deep within that functionality, within that mechanism. The earliest sketches of the bean machine, of course, were done at the peak of both scientific and artistic achievement, which is, of course, the Renaissance. Da Vinci's sketches for the bean machine. They were never made.
The Vitruvian bean.
Mm. It all originates there, doesn't it?
Hang on, aren't we supposed to call him Vinci?
Sorry, Vinci. No, that's like calling Ben Cardiff.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, God.
He's Leonardo, is he? From Vinci.
Yeah. You can call him Leonardo, I think.
You can call him Leonardo, but it doesn't narrow it down. It could be any Leonardo. I chose biology in biology GCSE as in my first lesson. There's a bloke wearing the traditional beard. And
was it Moses? You have made the wrong choice this day, my son.
He does a really good field trip, though, doesn't he?
He really does.
Oh, when he parts those wetland centres.
And drives a Mondeo down the middle.
So here's what happened, right? I was in my first biology lesson. I was like, it was all taught. I think it was Cortex and Pith, potentially.
Mm-hmm. What's that? Sounds like a folk duo. Yeah.
He brought out Bobby Cortex and Stevie Pith. And they brought out a series of Wessex sort of...
Wessex land shanties.
Yeah. And I was sat there and I was going, this is ridiculous. I mean, I could be... What is this compared to theology? I mean, this is just like feel like moisture moving backwards and forwards through a membrane. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I've made the wrong choice. I sat there, I've made the wrong choice. And I could see my life going out ahead of me of not being the Pope and all that goes with that. Hi, I'd like a Pope mobile, please. I'm sorry, this is just a normal Fiat dealership. You can't.
And I'm getting strong vibes from you that you did biology GCSE, so we absolutely cannot sell you a Pope. You must instead have this Fiat Panda.
or perhaps you'd like to craft yourself a car out of some bark and mushrooms. You fool! You biological fool! Maybe you can get to your destination by osmosis. Get the fuck out! and what I did was, right, and bearing in mind my parents and the school had to go through quite a few weeks of me umming and ahhing, and it was all a bit annoying for everyone, but I came home that night and I said to my parents, I was like, look, I'm so sorry, I've made the wrong decision.
I've ruined my future.
Long story short, I'm going to get very, very, very rudely treated in a Fiat dealership. That's what I've gathered from my soothsaying GCSE. That's what seems to be coming up.
The entrails have spoken.
Yeah. Can I please change? And they had to call up the school and stuff. So after what? Also, bit of a cuss to my biology teacher. I felt a bit sorry for him, the guy with the fake beard. But I changed. So they changed me from biology to RE, right? And this involved changing schedules. You know, it's like really complicated running a school, Ben.
What did you say, Ben?
Yeah. I don't know. But it's hard running a school. It's all timetabling and stuff. And like, you know, if you're there, if you do this set of lessons, then you're only open to this set of modules, and it's difficult planning the week and your diary. Anyway, they managed to move.
What nobody was able to tell you, Henry, is that it really didn't matter either way, did it?
Well, that's the thing. Maybe it wasn't that huge. Because I can't really remember anything that I studied anyway. But they moved me over to RE, right? And I was like, thank goodness. Well, not thank God. Well, maybe. I don't know.
Let's work out who we're going to thank.
Let's work out who we're going to thank.
Let's work it out in a couple of years. That's your coursework right there.
And I sat there, right, in RE. I was like, brilliant. You know, this is depth of cultural knowledge. Even if I don't, you know, necessarily believe in God, or I'm not sure that there is a divine power, this is culturally important. You know, it feeds into literature. It feeds into poetry.
Feeds into biology. Some of the ethical questions around biology.
Well, exactly. There you go. But it really did feel like there's two answers to the universe. And which do I choose? Is it about cells, things moving backwards and forwards through membranes, which is mainly what biology is? It's part of cells, particles, indeed, moving backwards and forwards through membranes. Or is it a guy called Moses with a stick walking around decreeing things? It's two very different sort of ways of looking at the world, isn't it?
Did he have a stick that turned into a snake, or did he have a snake that turned into a stick?
I think it was stick into snake.
Okay.
Ooh. A bush went on fire? That can happen to any bush, though. And so the RE teacher, who was also, I think, the school chaplain or whatever.
Real beard.
Real beard. Oh, yeah. And I gave it a good old tug to make sure, and it certainly was. And then so he was then talking about the Bible and stuff. I can't remember what it was exactly, but it was probably like biblical stuff at that point. And I sat there, and about 10 minutes in, I got this hot feeling in my neck. I was like, I've got to do biology. I can't do this. It is about cells. It is about membranes. And I want to get through the fucking membrane of that door and get the hell out of this room and stop listening to this absolute shite. And
I feel such immense empathy.
Yeah.
With your parents.
I know.
With whoever had to do the schedule at the school.
I know.
What frustrating with your older brothers.
I couldn't believe, but I felt so trapped. I was like, I have to get out of this RE. I cannot be in this. It has to be biology. Biology's the answer. So I then had to change. I made the request. We changed me back. So I'd insulted the first biology teacher. I'd insulted the RE guy and the chaplain. I then get transferred, but they couldn't transfer me back to the original biology teacher because of the schedules. They had to put me into an entire different sort of segment of the schedule.
No, it wasn't that, Henry. So, that would have been everyone listening knows that would have been the easiest change in the world.
You're right.
Back to square
even
one.
Saying it's
because
now,
you are. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been blacklisted by biology teacher number one.
Yeah.
Biology teacher number one has said he will have nothing further to do with you.
Yeah.
And he won't be responsible for his actions if he has to lay eyes on you one more time.
And looking back on it now, the second biology teacher did look a lot like the janitor's Alsatian.
And you were the only one in the class.
Yeah.
And you were outside.
It was just a little sheet that said, dissect yourself.
Yeah, maybe. You know, you, now I'm thinking about it, Mike. And actually, weirdly, using the information I've learned from biology, that cell went across a membrane from the biology section of the schedule into the RE schedule. The easiest thing in the world is that molecule to go back again. But instead, I was transferred through a different membrane into it. So I ended up with a completely new biology teacher, who actually was Dr. Custance. So, and then the whole gonads debacle never would have happened if I hadn't made that decision. So maybe it was worth it. But it was really, but I really felt that, like, you know, there was a lot of stake there. I have ended up doing the triumvirate, biology, physics and chemistry. How many of us can say that here right now today?
Probably all three of us.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose so.
Pretty cool though, right?
Well, I did something called double science.
Mm-hmm. You did double
all
science?
Three, but I only got two GCSEs, I think. Didn't get three.
Oh, they do that, didn't they? Or they just give you one or two or three, or yeah.
Yeah.
But you have to do all three, I think. Yeah.
Obviously, those three disciplines give you a different take on the particle, don't they? Each of them has its own approach to what a particle is.
Well, you sort of realise that all biology is basically chemistry, and then all chemistry is basically physics.
And all of it is probably RE, actually, potentially. I don't know that for sure, but it might be.
No, because you didn't do the
course.
If I'd
carried on. So, what are you saying, Ben? Which was the order they come in your mind?
Well, everything in biology sort of comes down to, like, chemical reactions that happen inside cells and inside animals and plants. So that's basically chemistry. And then all those chemical reactions are basically a sort of expression of physics in some way, aren't they? Am I making any sense, Mike?
You're making perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Like electrons dancing around that place, that kind of stuff.
And then you break it down to physics, and then that's all little tiny particles and stuff. And then you go even further, and you're right, Henry, you're back to RE.
Or the Higgs boson.
Yes.
Right?
The God particle itself.
What is that basic particle that cannot be divided, maybe? But essentially, so in physics, you've got these little round, they're quite cold, aren't they? Physics is quite a cold world, I think. It's not very touchy-feely, is it? It's not very, do you know what I mean? It's pretty brutal, sort of circles moving about.
You're not going to get tepid, brackish water in your wellies doing physics.
No.
There's a lot of sitting in a control room and saying, throw the switch. Is it ready?
Yeah. There's that. There's no thermos and a round of sandwiches sat on the end of a tour.
It's increase segment 9 to orange. That's our thing.
It's do we tell the public or not? Because they panic.
Yeah.
Why are there now two Professor Scoobenhats?
And why are they both saying, I've done it? Which one do we believe?
Which one of them do we execute?
Quick, check the Scoobenhats notebook.
Why is Dr. Rugenblug a baby suddenly? There's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's just over your typical lunch break, isn't it?
Yeah. that's your undergrad physics lunch break.
Yeah. You just get used to it, don't you?
Splitting the professor.
Yeah.
Chemistry is a bit more fun because you've got a Bunsen burner.
One way of looking at science and the sciences and comparing them is to look at the injuries you'll get. So in physics, it's more like Dr. Winkler doesn't exist anymore.
But he also exists an infinite number of times.
Yeah. So it's very hard to go to the NHS, for example, with that as a problem. but people do. You know, if you've ever been to A&E, you know, late on the weekend, there'll be loads of people. People have football injuries. People fight injuries.
In a university town, yes, someone's presenting as a gas.
Yeah, and, you know, there'll just be a moustache floating around
that you can only see through a special sort of spectrograph.
You know, and a lot of the time, it's young doctors on these night shifts. It's very hard for them to know what to do, isn't it?
Well, if they've got patients existing on different temporal planes, it's an absolute nightmare, admin wise.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, hello. My name is Dr. Fnugel. All of my particles are the wrong way around.
As you can tell, because I'm now a zebra.
I'm currently travelling backwards through time. I've already reached 1972 and it's only tea time.
And basically what you need in that situation is you've got to hope that one of the doctors in A&E was once an extra in a Christopher Nolan film.
Yeah.
And may have picked up some of the hot nonsense you need to know.
It's that sort of thing, isn't it? It's huge. It's big scale.
Yeah.
It's big scale stuff.
My husband's trapped in a bookcase.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of thing. I've become a memory of my great aunt's. Glass of water and some Nurofen. And then to chemistry is more sulfurous burns.
Chemical burns, yeah.
It's burns, isn't it? Yeah. So that
ruined rivers.
Yeah.
Pharmaceutical scandals.
Yep.
Yeah. All that stuff, but and in terms of personal body injury, it's pretty bad stuff, isn't it?
It's bitchin' smogs.
It's drug trial gone wrong stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's moustache on fire. Yeah. Which is why you should always wear goggles.
A lot of goggles going on. Chemistry, yeah, and thick gloves.
And you are in Bunsen burner world as a school child doing chemistry.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. It's the passport to hot fire.
Yeah,
yeah.
And in terms of particles, so in physics, we're talking little round circles with a large capital letter next to them, an arrow, maybe pointing towards a wobbly line representing time, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In chemistry, those little circles essentially start reproducing. They start attaching.
They get big enough to see with the naked eye, and you can see what colour they are, can't you?
Exactly.
Yeah. You're up to, the particles have moved up to, so it's particles really in physics and sort of granules really in chemistry, isn't it?
It's more granules, isn't it? So it's like a sort of hard...
It's a coarse-grained science.
That's right. So it's sort of muesli. It's a kind of like non-edible muesli, isn't it? A lot of what you're dealing with. Bright colours, because you've got bright purple. Mm-hmm. That's just one of the colours you can get, isn't it? There's pinks and greens. Substances, because, you don't really come across substances that often in real life. Normally, particles in real life have been formed by either a machine or a craftsperson into objects such as shoes. Sideboards, desk fans, etc. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's only in chemistry, really, that you come across just some substance. Like, oh, do you know what I mean?
Stuff in a jar.
Yeah, stuff in a jar. So here's some magnesium. Because normally, most objects in the cultural sphere are made out of a combination of substances, aren't they?
Physics, you can't keep the stuff in a jar. Chemistry, you can keep it in a jar, and it's fine on its own in the jar.
Yeah.
Biology, you can keep it in a jar, but it will need some special fluid in the jar as well.
That's right. And air holes, please. Please, air holes. And just a little bit of lettuce in the corner.
Yeah, if you need lettuce, you're doing biology.
Or some very deep physics. And Professor Snookenhat has turned into a lettuce.
Yeah, or RE, and you're just having lunch. So it is all linked.
Oh, it's linked, all right.
And then injury-wise for biology, then it's puncture wounds, sort of teeth ripping at your neck.
Teeth marks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's becoming food, isn't it? You become...
You enter the food chain.
That you, in a way, become you become internal chemistry to the biological organism which is consuming you.
Yeah.
Yes, it's venom.
It's amoebic dysentery.
It's all your dysenteries from amoebic to zoetropic. the whole range.
To predatory mammal dysentery.
I mean, it can even be getting trapped in a lift with thousands of wasps. There's lots of different ways to go, isn't there, with biology?
Yeah. And, you know, when you get to the sort of the university level stuff, occasionally there's going to be the odd sort of species splicing, liger accident, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
A peregrine hedgehog.
Your crocophant, you know. That's when things can really go wrong.
Yes, you could be... You could be trampled to death by a herd of wilder pigs.
Couldn't you? Time to read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, Postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Now, you might remember a few weeks ago we talked about somebody emailed in saying that their three-year-old was screaming the phrase, bring me the Kerrigans at every opportunity.
Indeed, yes.
In reference to Kerrigan's mustard.
It's Kerrigan's time, it's Kerrigan's time.
Bring me the Kerrigans, bring me the Kerrigans.
Tom writes that he too finds himself constantly singing the jingle to this fictional condiment. He says, my particular earworm has taken on a flavour that I'd be surprised to hear is shared by the three-year-old. In my head, it has become perfectly blended with Fragma's early 2000s banger, Tocker's Miracle. Now, I didn't remember the song Tocker's Miracle, but he sent us it, and I do recognise it. Have a listen to this.
Let me tell you, no, I
bring me the Kerrigans, bring me the Kerrigans.
Yes, my plagiarism has been unmasked. We've had some emails from people who came to our live shows. Thanks to everyone who came or who watched on the stream and what have you.
Yeah, thank you.
Hannah writes, I'm writing this after seeing your live show. Directly after the show, I went with a fellow beanhead to a pret-a-manger near the venue.
I know the one. All three of us went there, I believe.
We did. It had a very, very dour, a sort of weird atmosphere in there, didn't it?
It was a bit dour. Yeah, it was a bit dour. Although, actually, I found it was a bit less dour when I went in. I'm not saying it's to do with you, Ben, or any of the energy that you carry with you.
Sounds like you are.
I'm saying Ben brings the dower.
He's saying I've got the ability to bring down a whole pret.
I think you might.
Sour the vibe of a whole pret.
Yeah.
It felt like a last chance saloon pret to me. Like everyone in there was kind of on their last chance.
It's that sort of pret, that one.
The wrecking ball was halfway through its arc.
Yeah. There's a lot of like cops that have just been thrown off cases and stuff end up in there.
Yeah.
They'll be sat.
People have just been thrown out of the circus.
Just sort of twiddling a duck wrap, gazing out the window with a sort of dead-eyed stare. And there'll be brawls. Quite often there'll be a pret brawl happening in the corner.
And was Hannah part of one of those brawls? And what did Hannah make of this pret?
So she writes, the person sat at the table across from us, who I recognise as another member of the audience, had been plugging in their phone charger, which immediately exploded.
Ooh.
Blimey.
My guess is that the person in question had been attempting to listen to your podcast after seeing the live show, and their phone overloaded with the sheer power of the beam machine.
That's possible, yeah.
Although another admittedly darker idea is that this was an attack on the beanheads, an explosion planted by none other than our dastardly friend Spurbs.
And Spurbs, who knew there was a good chance that at least one of the beans might end up in that pret at some point.
Exactly.
It's possible that that was a Spurbs device, wasn't it? That
Collier, well, I hope that person survived unscathed.
So was that after the show, Ben?
After the show, yeah. A fellow audience member had their phone exploded.
But I wonder, Ben, because you noticed there was a weird atmosphere. This is not, none of this is a coincidence. You noticed there was a weird atmosphere in that pret. Something was going on. Maybe Spurbs was in there, Ben, planting that.
Maybe planting the whole pret. Might not have been a pret there before. It might have been a false pret.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been a false pret.
Might have been a dummy pret. It's true. I did notice that all my duck wrap was just full of sort of pencil sharpenings.
But with enough hoisin, Henry, it doesn't matter, does it?
That's true. With enough hoisin, exactly. That's what I did. Just hoisined it.
Barney and Ben were also in the King's Cross area on that Sunday and that very same show. And afterwards, instead of going to Pret, they went to the M&S food in the area. I mean, that's a different mindset, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, these guys are looking after themselves. These guys are bringing in top dollar by the sounds of things, I'd say.
Well, they write, as we entered the shop, we dared to dream that there might be a variety of goods on offer with the fabled yellow sticker.
Okay.
And we soon found out that our hopes were not in vain. Please see attached a photograph for evidence of our most beanful harvest. Since you are of an audio medium, you'll have to describe this to the listeners, that the image depicts 8 packets of mini Colin the Caterpillars, each priced at 68p per 5 Collins, instead of the retail price of £3.40. This is a total of 40 Collins.
Hang on, Colin, is that the cake or the sweet?
The cake that looks like a...
The great big cake.
They bought 40.
They bought 40 of them.
They bought 40 Colin the Caterpillar cakes.
Yes, at the price of 68p per 5 Collins.
Just because something's a good deal doesn't mean you need it. That's something that you have to learn in life. Just because something's good value.
But if they're men in their 20s, they can live off that.
They haven't said their age.
It's fine, isn't it?
It's got to be a man in his 20s.
They could both be veterans of the Second World War. Barney found himself so bowled over by the aggressive discount that he kept referring to the Collins as Henry's. Perhaps it was something to do with the pale complexion, warm grin, and shiny round face. Not to mention
what?
The chocolatey thorax and anal clasper.
Oh, come on, guys. Hang on, were these was this a real M&S? I'm sure it doesn't have an anal clasper. It's not that detailed.
It explains the price, doesn't it?
What's an anal clasper?
I'm imagining it's something that a real Colin has on their ass.
To hang themselves up in a wardrobe at the end of the day.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of any of that.
Anyway, it shows that people who come to our live show afterwards will often have a kind of extraordinary culinary experience.
Yeah, or need for a sugar high or something. They may be
feeling... I mean, they would have been feeling quite low, I imagine, by the end of the show. Yeah, quite
there's a depletion, yeah. I don't think you make the decision to buy 40 Colin the Caterpillar cakes if you're in a good place.
No, you're in a real state.
Yeah, you're in an absolute state. You're reaching out for anything.
And you don't even know if it's physical or emotional. You don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
You just know it's worth trying a sugar dump first, see if that helps.
Maybe I'll try and blow up my phone, or maybe I'll buy 40 cakes. I don't know.
I need to do something big, something life-changing. So I need to make a decision. I need to, because I've ended up in a place where I was in that show. I've ended up there. Yeah. So now I need to make a decision to change. 68p for 5 Collins. Right, get 40. That's an extraordinary deal, though. 4 Colin the Caterpillar cakes for 68p.
5.
5? I wonder what they've done with them now. They making their way through them, freezing them. What would you do?
I think I might sort of go through the streets in my open-top Saab handing them out.
Yeah.
Like a very king.
Yeah.
Like a king, exactly. Final email from Chris in Guildford. This references Henry told us a few weeks back about a time that he Q-jumped Sophie Addis Baxter.
Soho. Battersea. Old Southwark. Streatham. Vauxhall. Tufnell Park.
Barnet, technically.
Madame Tussauds.
The Cenotaph.
Halfords. Zone 5.
Mind the gap between your provincial existence and this metropolitan utopia. Next stop, urban enlightenment.
The glamorous London life of Henry Bacher.
Hang on a second. Is that Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber? No, it can't be. Because you're Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber.
I know!
We've actually had a couple of emails about this. Let's start with this one. Dear Beans, I too Q-jumped Sophie Addis Baxter.
What? We can't start this. The poor woman's life.
Oh, yeah.
This summer, I attended a festival in rainy Cornwall called Rock Oyster. It may be hard to believe, but the exact scenario that Henry described also happened to me. Well, almost exact. The only differences were as follows. Substitute a greengrocer's for a sweet kiosk.
Nice, yeah.
Substitute plums
yeah.
for a strawberry chupa-chup and a bag of flumps. and substitute Henry for Chris and Guildford. This leads me to believe that Sophie Ellis Bextor is very indecisive.
I was going to say, should she really be called Sophie Alex Dawdler?
Henry and Chris, you're doing some classic victim blaming right here.
That is victim blaming, sorry. Yeah, good point.
I think you need to reflect on your own cue behaviour, Chris and Henry.
I can't find the second email, the other email. I'm just trying to find, because I think it was a Patreon message. I can't find it, but basically it was someone just saying that you went down in their opinion because you jumped the queue in front of Sophie Ellis Bextor. And they said that it showed poor character on your part.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. I can't find the message anywhere.
No, I mean, I take that. It's not my finest hour.
No.
I mean, in my defense, same defense made at the time, it was just for a couple of plums.
I think they specifically said in this message that that's probably what you'd say and that that's not a good enough excuse because a queue is a queue.
Literally just two plums though, but yeah, okay, fine. I'll accept that. I mean, if it had been a couple of plums, a fennel, and some posh olive oil, different story. I think queue dynamics should allow for... I mean, it's the thing of when you're in a queue and there's Sophie Alex Bextor in front of you. No. So I need to think of a different example. You know, when you're in a queue and Jeff Lynne from ELO is in front of you.
Yeah.
And he's like buying like hundreds of plums.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
For his annual plum fight with Roger Taylor from Queen.
He brings the plums, Roger Taylor from Queen. Queen brings the Labradors. Yeah. The Labradors get to eat all the plum detritus at the end of the day, which makes them ill. And that's when Brian May comes along with his mobile
Labrador shit vacuum
that he built himself with his father.
I smell fireplace.
No. What I'm saying is, so, you know, sometimes there's a situation in a queue where, okay, no, this is where you need to think about it. Imagine that you're Sophie Ellis Bextor,
right?
Okay,
yeah, okay.
So
let's flip the switch.
Flip the switch. So, what does it feel like to know that you produced timeless Ibiza anthem, beautiful, pure dance pop, a real infinite banger, an infinite banger,
right?
In Murder on the Dance Floor, you made that. That's yours. Yeah. So just to get you into the character.
Yeah.
And then there's someone behind you.
Yeah.
So, but you know you're buying fennels, leeks, sweet potato, normal potato, Maris Piper potato, baby potato, all the, you know, you're buying loads and loads of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's someone behind you in the queue that's just got two plums. Sometimes you'll wave them through. You must have done that.
Yeah, but that's in her gift, isn't it?
That is in her gift. But sometimes, when you're in a situation where, because I've waved people through in the past. Have you waved people through in that situation?
Yeah.
So I know that ethically there's a situation where being waved through is a good result for this situation, ethically. So all I'm doing is pointing out to the person, this might be a wave through here. I mean, because, you know what I mean?
No, but that's not what happened.
That's not what happened, no. Well, I took it one step further, which is I went, a wave through is happening. I've waved myself through.
Which is not in your gift.
It's just a couple of plums. I think it's okay to say to someone, do you mind letting me through? It's just a couple of plums.
It depends on the situation.
Yeah, it does depend on the situation, yeah. Well, this one's going to run and run, so let's let it rumble on.
Yeah, it's the ethical quandary that's gripping the nation.
It's sort of like one of those trolley debates, isn't it? You're in a trolley. Sophie Specs is another trolley. There's another trolley full of plums. They're all heading for a chasm.
You can only save one trolley.
You can only save one trolley.
Yeah, you save the plums.
You've got to save the plums.
Save the plums every time. Because the plums can feed 1,000 Bextors. But of course, if you give Sophie Alex Bextor a fishing rod and teach her to catch plums.
Or even better, teach her to teach people. Yeah.
Then actually, maybe there is a better world ahead of us for everyone that we can share in a supportive and kind environment.
Thank you, Henry. That was beautiful.
Patreon.com patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you very much indeed.
It's your place for ad-free episodes, the monthly bonus episode, and if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge.
You better believe it.
And Mike indeed was in the Sean Bean Lounge last night.
I was. Yeah, of course.
It was a salty one, wasn't it?
We got a little bit salty, sure.
Yeah.
It was the origami spice rack challenge, wasn't it?
Thank you, Henry. Yes, it was. And here's my report.
It was the origami spice rack challenge last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. Richard Brownhill attempted a skeletal polyhedra spice rack, but given he was using Hannah Jenkins's locally sourced rice vellum underpointed and the rack was barely able to support a single clove. Shannon Pat eschewed paper entirely and reverse-folded Azu into the soft crease between Jack Tsonis and James McIlraith before tessellating Ankit Rai perpendicular to Matthew Britton's dog base, swivelling an octopleat into Elaine Fowler via Michael Freeman's landmark, before rabbit's nosing Lucy Patrick Ward, allowing a half moon fudge factor for Jonathan Gorard's frog sump, and closing the sink completely over Patup Scobay and Tom Storr. Just as Matt was about to insert the test oregano, the construction was attacked by a furious Russell Taylor, aka Winebuff, using ballistic nutmeg. Russell had been mistaken in the belief that his own modular Noshi 5 types of Chinese 5-spice spice rack had been sabotaged by Shannon owing to some shonky intelligence from Warren Pears, that the linen-finished paprika paper he'd acquired from Ben Price had been intentionally over-dried by Sean Jones and augmented with incendiary margin lines by Tom Cornwall using the famously combustible elbow scrapings of Rob, all at the behest of Shannon when the truth of it was that Russell's fingers were acting like flint and fire steel during construction because Duncan Easton had accidentally swapped his gloves for Fran Milhouse's firework display operating mittens. This then was the cause of what became known as the spicy inflagration with a hint of licorice, which incidentally was Sandra Elliott's nickname at the Academy. Despite the disruption, Chloe Padgett and Pauline kept cool heads and maintained impenetrable focus, and squash folded an action model spice rack over a crease powder that was able to hold fenugreek, holy basil, and all of the spices that begin with the letter C. Hannah Bevis waterbomb folded Sweet Baby Barefoot's reverse single parallel magpie crinkle, but misjudged the underlap, and the rack could only hold spices if the spices were being held by Joe and or Nate Siegfried and or Niall Duncan and or Rory. Alex F. quadrupleted Hannah Moffat into a dill shelf. Barry Donovan crimped Aaron Peters into a saffron perch. Borax Killing Machine valley folded double twisted windmill units into what looked like a spice rack but functioned like a miniature car hoover. Zachary Davis created a perfect MC Escher spice rack. And has so far sent Laurie Wesley, Callum Hayden, Simon Polstra and James Kennedy down it to place some dried bay leaves, but at the time of writing, none of them has made it back out again. And last but not least, Susanna Clark panicked, swallowed a jar of peppercorns whole, and made a fairly decent paper aeroplane. Thanks all.
That's the end of the show. This week's theme will be by Will from Ottawa. Mm. I've been listening to your show since its beginning, much to the chagrin of my immediate family, and have long wanted to submit a cover of your theme tune. Now, throughout my life, I've only been able to play two instruments, the viola and bagpipes.
Oh, crikey. I tell you, being around this person in the learning phase of that double is pretty hard. That must have been hard for them. I'm not surprised that the family are dishing out chagrin.
So he said, my initial thought, once Mike had slagged off the viola in one of your earlier episodes.
Sounds incredible.
That might have been my chance. However, I was beaten to the punch by an admittedly better and much more qualified professional violist. Mm. Violist? I have since stopped playing the viola, brackets for reasons unrelated to Mike's bollocking of the instrument. So that leaves only one option. I present to you the three-bean jig. It doesn't sound exactly like the original because the bagpipes have quite a limited register of notes, but I tried my best to emulate the spirit of the theme. Well, I for one cannot wait to hear this.
Well, thank you, Will.
Can I say, I find bagpipe music, when it is played well, and it really gets you, and you see the sun glinting off the learned sausage in your fist. No, but you know, like, when
it's rousing.
When it really hits it, it goes straight to your heart, and it's like your heart is being blown into and mashed.
Yeah, you just want to run a claymore through an Englishman's belly. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's all you want to do.
Okay, well, thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
Until next time. And here's Will's theme.
Cheerio.